TV Campfire Podcast.
Have you seen it yet? OMG.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken record.
Oh, no! We're fans.
It just goes up from there.
Oh! All right, we got to a whole different level.
No, you didn't.
We talk TV.
She is the most useless one-dimensional character ever.
Premiere of Spartacus.
Vengeance.
Welcome to the show. This is podcast number 140, and I am Libya, your host, and this week we have returning guests.
Hi, I'm Tom from Glendale.
Allison from Tarzana.
And Susie from Sherman Oaks.
And I am currently in Chicago.
Woohoo, where it's nice and snowy now, right?
Well, it's not snow. It snowed. It's not snowy. Oh. There's like barely any snow on the ground at all. But
wow, that to Chicago O'Hare International Airport.
I know. Oh, yeah. But where I am right now, it did snow. Snow fell from the sky, it then immediately melted. So, wow. All right, let's go on with the news. First up I have is that Happy Endings and Don't Trust the Bee have both been moved to Sundays, which is strange.
At what time?
It didn't say. It just said that the network was shuffling their schedule and they decided to move them. I was like, Sunday night comedies? Really?
Yeah. Isn't Sunday night already pretty crowded if everything stays the same? This last season was really hard.
666 Park Avenue is going away.
Right.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
So they've seriously gone away. They're not even airing the last episodes.
Oh, right. They're not.
No, they pulled it. They pulled it from the schedule.
Well, I wonder if they're going to move Revenge to 10 and put the comedies after Once Upon a Time. That's a weird flow.
Yeah, it's really strange. But because Once Upon a Time and Happy Endings, they're like thinking the name thing will convince people to watch the next one or something, maybe.
Oh, they're in for a big surprise.
Although I do love Happy Endings. It's a fun ensemble and it's an enjoyable show.
I am trying to catch. Well, it's okay. I've watched like 6 episodes. Anyway. Next piece of news is Psych has been renewed for season 8.
Yay! Even though I don't watch it yet.
Well, I finally watched the last season finale, which was actually pretty good. But the dark twist at the end, though.
I'm kind of tired of Psych, I have to say. I mean, I used to really love the show. Like, I would never miss an episode, but now I'm kind of like, you know.
Too much going on. Too much else.
Yeah, I'm kind of tired of it. I think the problem
with shows like that, once you get to... Seven seasons is like the great shelf life for a network drama. And when you go beyond that, it just really starts to sag.
Yeah, I agree. There's nothing else to do. Anyway, speaking of that, Leverage has been canceled at season 5.
Yeah, boo. I know you don't care, Olivia, but I enjoyed it. It was one of those good turn-off-your-brain, just-enjoy shows. It wasn't spectacular, but it was fun.
I think the first couple of seasons, I would agree with you. I did enjoy watching Leverage, like the first 3 seasons. Mm-hmm. And then I just kind of, they were treading water. Nothing, no character development. Like everything I was waiting for to happen just wasn't happening. So I got
tired
of that.
That's where a great arc plot can be helpful.
Yes, and their arc plots were not great. They had a couple, but they weren't great. Anyway, that's just...
At least they had an inkling they might get canceled, so they planned for it. Last episode that airs on Christmas Day was written to be a series. It was the series finale they had been planning on since the beginning.
Oh, really? Oh,
okay,
cool.
Well, that's good.
I might actually watch that one then.
You'll get closure then.
Yeah. All right, and the last piece of news I have is The Walking Dead showrunner Glenn Mazzara has been fired by AMC, and that's 2 for 2 for AMC.
Yeah, what is their plan? What are they thinking? I just want to know what
they are greedy SOBs.
Yeah.
Well, what makes no sense is this is probably the best season of Walking Dead they have ever done.
Oh, by far.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this guy knocked it out of the park. I don't know what you wanted him to do, but the ratings went up, the acclaim went up, everything went up for the show, and as a reward, they fire him.
I think it has to be one of those personality things behind the scenes. Somebody didn't like somebody else, and they just booted him.
Well, what they said was that their creative direction was different. They basically said they wanted to take the show a different way than he did.
That's like the irreconcilable differences for Hollywood.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, and which is true, except it totally paid off.
Yes,
that's
it did.
What doesn't make any sense. If it didn't work and the ratings crashed or something, I could totally see them going, nope, we were right, you were wrong, bye. But he completely showed them that he put his money where his mouth was.
Yeah, I agree. And Hollywood kind of came out in his defense, and there was a bunch of articles and tweets and criticizing AMC for their treatment of the showrunner. And I was just like, well, I've never seen that happen before, where everybody else is mad at a network for firing someone.
Well, Sean Ryan, who created The Shield, and Glenn Mazzara cut his teeth on that years ago, but they're good friends. And then Kurt Sutter also. Both of those guys, by the way, have relationships with FX. But there's loyalty among people in Hollywood, and not for networks, when networks treat creative talent shabbily. Especially, it is the hottest show on TV.
The hottest numbers in the demographic.
I mean, it's easily AMC's strongest show, you know, ratings-wise. And the idea that they're going to kick out the guy who made that possible just defies
explanation. Well, I think that their thought is, if you have zombies, who cares? Nobody cares about the story. And I'm like, that's not true.
Except last year, the ratings were in the toilet because it was so boring.
So it's
not just zombies. You have to have a show that actually is good to go along with it.
I agree with that sentiment.
And a lot of that is because they fired Darabont at the last minute, so it took them, it felt like, half the season to recover and get their footing.
Well, yeah, now I'm afraid what the heck is going to be season four. But anyway, let's get on with talking about the show.
How I Met Your Mother got picked up for season 9.
Sorry. I should have said, do you have any news, Tom? And then you said that. Okay, cool. Sorry about that. All right, let's talk about the shows. First up, let's talk about... Oh, by the way, we are talking about 2 weeks worth of shows. Not just last week, but the week before as well, because we did not have a podcast last week. So let's talk about the finale. Well, is it 2 episodes of Homeland or just the finale? I'm going to say...
It was two.
We got 2 episodes, yeah. This last week was the finale.
Okay, so let's do Homeland. Go. What did you guys think? I don't even remember what the week before one was.
They got Abu Nazir.
The capture of Abu Nazir.
Yes, his capture was, it seemed too easy. And so that kind of makes this episode make more sense.
Yeah, it said it. Well, you could tell he deliberately wanted them to shoot them. They had him, he was on the ground, and then he deliberately made a move that instigated them to open fire. So you could tell he had something planned.
His hiding place was pretty good. That was the week before where he was hiding. Never mind.
No, but that's where they found him.
Yeah, it's all blurring together now. I'm like, But one thing I have to say is, in this last episode, the pacing was so weird because nothing happened for almost the first half hour of the episode.
But I think that was kind of clever of them, because I thought so too. I'm like, wow, you know, this is a show that we're so used to, like, every episode, what you think is going to be like a big cliffhanger happens, you know, in the middle of a normal episode. So they got Abu Nazir, and it's like, there's one more episode before, you know, the break. Like, well, what could they possibly do? They got Abu Nazir. It's like, okay, so Carrie and Brody, they get together, you know, get the resolution with the family thing. You know, it's like, well, what are they going to do? The thing with Saul, you know, what's happening with him? And you started to see the relationships get together. You know, Saul's wife calls him and says, I'm coming home. And people start to kind of get together. And then I think that was the whole point. It kind of lulled you into thinking, well, what? There's nothing else for them to do.
Right.
And then you get the big explosion. And that really shook things up, literally, you know?
I mean, it truly looked like it was all being tied up with a neat little bow. Yeah. And I was thinking to myself through most of the episode, I have no idea what they're going to do for season 3. This is just, this is tying up so neatly and so nicely. What in the world are they going to do that's going to stretch through the episode? And then, boom! Literally. That's what they're going to do.
Yeah,
so I think that was just as
was there
as
a moment
said, deliberate.
Was
deliberate.
There a moment where you guys thought that Brody set that bomb?
Nope,
I didn't. But I like the fact that she thinks he did. So now I'm wondering, should I think he did?
I love the wonderful irony that the one terrorist act he does not do, and that's what he's getting blamed for. Oh, I think there's a delightful irony in that.
What I thought was really kind of cool is that. Abu Nazir goes out, he's like, screw you all! And he screws over the CIA, but he screws over Brody by releasing that video.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because Brody had just started to get, like, his family to, or at least his daughter, to trust him again. It's like, yeah, that ship sailed now.
he's got nothing. He's got, how is he going to convince them that that's fake? Because he totally recorded it. And you can't say they didn't, But it's like he was a completely different person when he recorded that message.
Yeah. So well, there's no way he's going to talk himself out of it. I mean, you know, just the reactions of the family, you know, you could see them just, and especially his daughter, everything is just put together like a perfect puzzle for her. So there's just absolutely no way he can possibly go back on any of that.
And Libya made me aware of something that I had not heard, that he is not expected to return for future seasons.
Yes, they the showrunners of Homeland, if you don't, it's not exactly a spoiler because they just decided they're not bringing the Brody families back for season 3, and it's all going to be about Carrie and Saul and what they're doing. I don't know anything else other than that.
Interesting.
And I'm kind of like, I like Brody a lot, and it's, they said that they thought about killing him and then they decided not to. So that it leaves attention to the possibility of Carrie clearing his name. But the only problem with that is I'm like, well, first of all, Damian Lewis is, and they said that they were going to like maybe bring him back later, you know, for a special guest star or whatever. And I was like, Damian Lewis is like he's a really hot commodity right now. I was like,
yeah, he is.
I was like, this guy is going to leave Homeland and star in whatever the heck he wants to.
Well, it's not like he's had other shows.
Right. Yeah. So. Yeah, I just think that that's kind of crazy, especially if they expect him to just, because there's certain actors that, you know, when you take them off a show, they're not doing anything other than waiting around for you to bring them back.
And I was sitting like, sadly by the phone.
Yeah,
but it makes sense because really at this point, like we all said, there really is no turning back for him. So it would have been really awkward for them to try and keep pushing that story. Like, what are they going to do? So I'll be interested to see what they do.
Yeah,
I do too. And I the thing is, I would like to see something of Brody in the future. But I have to say, the weakest part of the show recently for me has been this romance between Brody and Carrie. And it just makes my hair stand on end whenever they start getting into that.
They're
both so psychologically damaged.
I know.
Well, but you know, they were doing that last year and it was believable because they did play on the fact that both of these people are seriously broken and this is a very unhealthy relationship. What I think was different this time around is that they were trying to portray this as in some way truly romantic. And that just made my skin crawl.
I don't know. I kind of liked it. So I was a minority on that, but I did like them together. I think they kind of sold me on it a little bit, but this is not that kind of show. The show is not about their romance. It's about other things. So I'm okay with, because I knew they weren't going to stay together. I was like, no matter what they did, they weren't going to be a couple. That wasn't going to ever happen. And I knew that. So I was happy for the little bit that I did get. But let's wrap that up. I think as a finale, it was a weird kind of finale. The pacing was so strange, but it did have a really good payoff. So I think overall, I'm going to say thumbs up. And I think overall for season 2, I'm going to say thumbs up as well.
Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, let's talk about Dexter, that had an also very crazy finale.
Oh my gosh, yeah. The last two, actually, I saw 3 episodes just this morning. So I'm like, ooh, Dexter in the head.
But
yeah, wow.
The pacing on that was just, it was just 100 miles an hour.
Really was. And I have to say too, since having not seen it last year at all, last season, and then seeing this season and kind of building into it and thinking it's a much stronger season, boy, these last few episodes have just been like, they're really pushing the story and it's great.
Well, I mean, because they know they have an end, like next season is their final season and they know that. And so they're pushing towards it and you really feel it. I have to say the second to last episode was basically Hannah versus Deb. And who will Dexter choose? And I don't know why Hannah thought that Dexter would choose her over his sister. I'm not sure. Like, I could see, like, you know, picking her in an argument, but, like, death? Like, I'm going to let you kill my sister? That's never going to happen.
No. But, you know, I have to say, and this is the thing, for a little bit, I was thinking that maybe Deb set herself up. I was like, I totally believed Hannah. I'm like, she's so perfect for him. They're so happy together. I'm like, she didn't do that. You know, it's like, of course Deb did it. Because she said, you know, when they met that night, one of the last things she said to Hannah was, you know, like, basically, I will do anything, you know, for my brother. So I thought for sure she would risk herself being in this accident, you know, just doing this whole thing to set it up. And so when Hannah just very casually admitted it when Dexter was talking to her in prison, I was like, oops, I guess she really did do it.
Yeah, I was totally sure that Deb had done it. And me too. I thought that Deb was brilliant. Yep. I was like, that's a brilliant maneuver.
Yep, yep. So props to them for making us both believe that, at least, which is probably what they wanted. And so yeah, that was great. And then this whole thing with the storyline with Dokes and I want to call her LaGuardia now, too, thanks to you, Libya.
LaGuardia. There we go.
LaGuardia, thank you. You know, the whole storyline with her. I'm glad that the whole thing with Quinn and his hooker girlfriend, that whole thing is done. So that's good.
But so unfortunately, it looks like he's going to hook up with Batista's sister, which I really don't want to see.
Oh, well, we'll see what they do with that. It's a B story anyway. It's like a B or a C story even. But yeah, so there's just like all these different storylines with, I want to say Escondido or whoever the guy that got out of prison that killed Dexter's mother.
Right. That was good. Yeah.
So bringing that guy into it, you know, this whole thing with these flashbacks Dexter had to the early days with Dokes and LaGuardia and just everything coming together the way it did. Like, holy crap. So...
Well, and also the fact that they allowed Dexter to redefine his code to be like he could kill anybody he wants to.
Yeah, the whole thing, because when he started talking about, I think it was two or three episodes before where he was talking about the Dark Passenger with Hannah.
Yeah.
And so he was finally starting to talk about it more realistically. And the fact that he started to admit, he's like, yeah, it does kind of seem silly. And then she says, well, are you sure you're not just making it up kind of as an excuse for this behavior? And so in this last episode, he was like basically telling his imaginary dad friend that, yeah, you know, this is him. And he's got to be who he is. You know, it's like, okay.
Well, what was also weird, too, is in his justification, he said this is the first time he's ever killed somebody for a human reason. The reason that other humans kill each other is to protect themselves, for advantage. And he's never killed anybody like that before. And he's like, huh. That makes me normal.
It does. Like, it was amazing. And then I have to say, out of all of it, because of course the ending with, oh my gosh, when I always keep forgetting we're okay with like spoilers on the show because the whole point is talking about the episode. But when Deb kills LaGuardia and then just like immediately just like runs over to her sobbing, it's like you could tell she immediately regretted the decision, but she knew she had to do it. And if she wasn't effed up before, man, she is off the rails now.
Oh yeah. You saw like them at the party later.
Oh,
you could see that she wasn't even moving under her own, you know, emotion at all.
Gone.
She was holding on to Dexter. He was guiding her through the party, and she was in shock.
She's gone. So all of that was awesome. The one thing I have to say annoyed me, though, which is really unfortunate, is the one slip-up they did. I hate it when the shows do that. So Hannah has her little fit in the ambulance or in the prison van.
Yeah,
and they bring her to the hospital. They hook her up. And she, like, kind of comes out of it and leaves. I'm like, doesn't that make the whole hospital staff look like inept idiots that they can't tell that she's faking? Did they not do tests? I mean,
No, but she wasn't faking. She drugged herself. Remember, she got her friend to give her...
She did?
Yeah.
But it was too convenient. I don't believe people can do that as easily as the shows say they can.
Well, I mean, the thing is, she's supposed to be a world-class poisoner. So it's not like she's an amateur. It's not like it's me and you pretending to take some aspirin.
So you're assuming she had the right dosage and everything all planned.
Yeah, because she very clearly said, write down these instructions exactly as I tell them to you.
Yeah.
You know, I was okay with the hospital not realizing what was going on, because she deliberately gave herself whatever drug she wanted to create the symptoms that she wanted. That was fine. I'm actually more bothered by the inept police department who was supposed to be guarding her.
Like, there you go. Okay, that. We'll add that to it.
No
one was guarding her. They had her on a cable tie.
Right.
You know?
With scissors conveniently located nearby.
Sure. So that was just one thing that bothered me, is how easy she got away.
Well, actually, my one quibble was you talked about the scene where Deb goes and hugs LaGuardia after she's dead. And so she's hugging her, and LaGuardia's bleeding all over the place, right?
Yep.
She's wearing the same dress at the party. I'm like...
Oh, snap. Was she really?
Yeah. I was like, that dress... Well, because she couldn't go home and change dresses, because then everybody would be like, why'd you change your dress? So...
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
So she's wearing the same... she's wearing the same dress, and she was hugging all over LaGuardia with all that blood...
Yeah.
And I was like, how did she not get any blood on her? She should have got blood on her shoes.
Oh, she had to have. Yeah. Absolutely.
So that
party was messy anyway. She was already bleeding from Dexter.
Right. And that's the thing, is Dexter had on his murder clothes. So he had on all the stuff he's supposed to wear to protect himself from the blood flow. She didn't. And so I was like, boo. So that bothered
me. That's a good point. Yeah, the continuity was asleep. All right. Good point. All right.
Anyway,
but overall, thumbs up.
Yes,
yeah.
It was a very, very good finale. It had you, you know, edge of your seat, and I didn't know what Deb was going to do. And you know what? Actually, I think shifted it was when Dexter gave his permission and dropped his knife and was like, you know what, you can do what you got
to
do.
Yeah, you make the choice. She got to make the choice. And she chose her brother.
Yep, as we all knew she would. All right.
Yep.
So thumbs up, Dexter.
Yep.
Next up, we're going to talk about Vegas. And Tom, did you watch Vegas?
Yep.
It's weird. I think I watched two episodes in a row, and I still like the show, but I can't tell where the show's going now.
Got to find their rhythm because, man, it's so wildly uneven, and you don't care about the procedural stuff is not as interesting as the mob stuff.
Right. And I couldn't, like, but now the mob storyline, after the big boss killed the other boss and now he's in charge, I can't tell where the mobster story is going. Like, I don't see a flow. I mean, I'm still enjoying the characters, I'm still enjoying them, but I would say this, in the first few episodes, if you gave me another episode, I would watch it immediately. Right now, if you gave me another episode of Vegas, I'd be like, sure, I'll watch it.
When I get to it.
Yeah, I'll eventually watch it. Like, I should not be ebbing my interest in the show. It should be getting more, so.
I thought the Christmas episode was stronger than the previous one.
Okay, which one was, what was happening on the Christmas one?
The ex-mistress shows up and she's dating the boss now.
Oh, right. So that was actually pretty good.
She's trying to pull her little power play and then Michael Chiklis figures out that she's working for the feds.
Right, and then he tries to get her out of town, but then the other guy figures it out too and she ends up dead. Oh, yep. Mysterious drug overdose. I was like, is that... that's kind of like his... No, that's a different mobster story. I'm mixing up my mobster stories. Never mind. But yeah, it's okay. Like, and I hate that guy. I'm waiting for Chiklis to kill him.
Oh, or the daughter now.
Yeah, I really don't like that guy. I mean, I think it's supposed to be a villain we love to hate. I just really
We just hate him.
Yeah, he just really irritates.
Yeah, it's really uneven, and I think that their ratings have been dipping a little bit, so they need to be careful.
Yeah, they need to bring it back to quality. Give me something. All
right. Yeah, I thought it was interesting that they finally had a little forward motion, very little, with the brother and with Jason O'Mara and
the daughter. Yeah,
the daughter, and then also finally with Carrie Ann Moss and Dennis Quaid. It's like, remember, I'm on the show.
Oh right, yeah, they had their little tense moment like under a mistletoe or in a doorway or something, and they were just staring at each other. I was like, all right, do something, and no.
But still at least not caring for the son.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that actor's as strong as they thought he was.
Yeah. But,
all right, so let's wrap that up. I don't like talking about a show when I have all negatives. So let's move on. One thing I wanted to note is Rizzoli and Isles is back for a bunch of Christmas episodes. If you guys watch the show, and if you don't watch the show, you should watch the show.
Getting caught up. It's a fun show. I'm glad you turned me on to it.
It's like... That was. It's not Cagney and Lacey. It's like It's like a buddy cop show, but with two females.
Two women.
Yeah, and they're like, they're the odd couple because one of them is all by the guts cop, and the other one is super analytical ME, and so their personalities are the inverse and opposite of each other. And watching them argue about something is hilarious. Like, they do a really good job with the humor on that show. And they do deliver the drama when they need to. So I really like it.
I was surprised by the reveal that Mom was dating the police captain.
Oh, right. Well, they had the fact that they brought the mom to work and now she's in the office with them all the time is really funny because she always, you know, gives them a hard time about what they're eating and stuff, which is pretty funny. But yeah, her dating the police chief is interesting because then it gives him something to do.
Yep, because... Boy, last year they did not use him at all, except for, I'm the authority figure around here. Stop that.
Well, now they have really awkward moments with him and Rizzoli, which is also funny. So, thumbs up. I like Rizzoli and Isles. You should give it a shot. It's on TNT on Tuesdays, I want to say. All right, next up, we're going to talk about Arrow.
Mm-hmm. thought this was a pretty good mid-season finale or winter finale or whatever they're calling it.
Yes.
I thought it was kind of a no-brainer that,
that
John Barrowman was this mysterious dark archer, because he is the Merlin villain from the comics that I've been talking about that nobody else reads comics, so they didn't know what I was talking about.
Kind of least surprising reveal.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
It's not surprising at all, but you know he's going to, I mean, we knew he was going to be a major part of the show, and I thought it was interesting how coy they've been teasing us, what, half the season, that this is like kind of the big bad, right, at least for season one.
Well, what's interesting is I actually saw it with somebody else, and we were watching it, and I was like, that's John Barrowman. And he was like, no, it's not. He's too big. I was like, that's John Barrowman. And we're going back and forth arguing, and then when he pulls off his hood, he goes, huh, that was John Barrowman.
Says, doy.
So it was interesting that I watched with somebody who didn't believe that. He thought it was somebody else entirely. So we got into an argument about that as we were watching it. But I thought that the rest of the story was really pretty good, because he's got this, basically he's got this guy who's imitating him, and he's like, what the heck? And trying to figure that mystery out working with Diggs. I really like them as a team, and I really like how they work together and just the flow of the show. It makes me feel good to watch it. And I that doesn't happen on a lot of shows. So
it makes me feel good to watch it just for those shirtless scenes working out. But well, hey, whatever works.
That's not what I meant.
But well, that's what I meant.
As far as I'm concerned, that is a completely valid reason to tune in.
Thank you. Thank you. You don't have to discount it. That's for sure.
Absolutely not.
I'm just talking about, I like the world that they created.
Yes. No, I agree too. Obviously the hottie in the lead role isn't the only reason I watch it, but it doesn't hurt.
No.
But yeah, I think it was a good episode to leave us kind of until, well, I guess January. I guess as a mid-season break, it's not that long. It's January 16th, I guess, is the next episode.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's a good break, and I'm trying to remember what else was going on in the episode.
Well, they gave us the cliffhanger of, you know, Walter being kidnapped.
Oh, that was big. Yeah.
The stepfather was continuing his investigation and gets kidnapped for it. Boy, that actor must be busy doing other stuff.
That's what
they're like, let's write you off for a while. Okay, this time you're leaving voluntarily. Oh, this time you're kidnapped.
Well, that's the thing, is I was talking about it because I was like, oh yeah, he actually is a semi-famous British actor. I've seen him in a lot of things.
Colin Salmon.
Dr. Moon in Doctor Who.
Right, yep. And so I've seen him in a lot. He's been in James Bond movies before. He's been in big movies. So he is probably working. And so every time he needs a break for a movie or something, he must be like, all right, I got this. My schedule says I need to be away for 6 weeks.
Don't kill me off. Just sign me, you know, have me go somewhere for a while. But then they also, I think this episode, didn't they also kind of reveal that back on the island, Yao Fei was actually like a criminal or something?
Yes. Well, I don't know if I believe that guy, though.
I mean, we don't know the specifics about it, but supposedly it was an island specifically set up for like the most dangerous possible criminals.
Yeah.
Well,
so,
I agree that he's dangerous, but I'm not sure I believe that guy. I mean, he's not the most trustworthy guy.
No.
Yeah. Right.
No, I wouldn't take him as the authority on that.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
I love that we're fully invested in the island storylines, though.
Oh, yeah.
Well, because they're
tied into the main storyline, and most shows haven't figured out how to do that organically and well.
No, and they do that particularly well. In fact, I was actually missing that the previous two episodes.
Yes,
when they didn't
when they did the Huntress two-parter. It's like, what? No island?
The only thing I don't like about the island, or I don't miss about it when they don't have it, is that bad hair. I know it's island hair, but
oh, the
still.
Bad, you don't like the bad
the
hair?
The island wig.
Yes,
yeah,
that
the
is
island
pretty
wig,
bad.
Right, because it's going to be a huge thing, yeah.
They need to pay the bucks to get a better wig. Snow White's wig on Once Upon a Time, $100,000.
Oh, wow. Well, it doesn't look like a wig, so there you go.
Yeah.
All right. So thumbs up for Arrow?
Yes.
Sure.
All right. Next up, let's talk about Big Bang Theory. And this was the D&D one, right? Oh, the D&D Christmas episode.
D&D Christmas episode.
Where they're going on a quest to save Santa.
And Girls Night Out. And Girls Night Out.
With Raj, exactly.
Well, yeah, because he got killed immediately in the game.
Well, the best part is, I forget the name, the, who's the guy that runs the comic book store? Stewart. His, the fact that he's saying what all of us have always been thinking whenever Raj says something only slightly suggestive, he's just like, he looks and he's like, do you hear these things when they come out of your mouth? Like, do you listen to the, you know, do you think about them before you say them? Like, I was dying because I'm like, that's exactly it. Perfect.
Oh, by the way, he just got added as a series regular.
No, good.
He's been a series regular all season.
Oh, how's he though? With the credits and everything?
He's not in every episode, but when he is, he's in the main title.
Well, I didn't know he was a series regular, so I'm really happy that he is.
Yeah, just like what they did with, when they phased the women in, they did the same thing.
Okay, well, that's smart of them. They get that. They deserve that credit, so that's good.
They have good agents.
Yes.
And but a smart studio. I think it's interesting that they quashed the rumors about Stewart and Raj actually being a couple. It's just they're having fun teasing us, but Stewart does note that, what are you doing?
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of like, it reminds me of on Arrested Development when Michael would tell... Tobias, buddy, do you listen to yourself talk?
Are you aware?
When Tobias would say things like, I blew myself. Blue Man Group, of course.
Of course.
But I think that the D&D part, and you find out all of Sheldon's hang-ups about Christmas and why he hates Santa Claus and all that backstory. It's just like, whoa, dude, you have issues.
Big issues. But I like how they very subtly were able to work in Jim's actual Broadway talent of being able to carry a tune. You know, they conveniently stuck that in there as he happens to know all the lyrics to Good King Wenceslas.
It's like, I don't even know that song. He knows like five verses of that song?
All the verses.
That was crazy.
And I love they cut to commercial with him singing it and come back from commercial with him
finishing it up.
Yes. That was all pretty good. And then
the Girls' Night Out was fun, too.
Oh, when they first came in and when they bust through the door and, you know, and basically Penny's like, all right, guys, here's what you're missing. And they just do the little fashion walk. And then Amy comes out and they're like, and Amy fashioning some ankles. Because otherwise, the girls looked hot, I have to say.
They tried to set up Raj, and what happened? I can't remember. Oh, he got turned. Oh, then he did the whole why he always lusted after all his friends' girlfriends, except for Amy Farrah Fowler. And then foot stuck in mouth syndrome. That was all pretty good.
Can't figure it out.
Yes, that was pretty good. He goes, and then after the end, he goes, now I find her kind of hot. And I was like, oh no.
What's great about that is that she did it. She played that whole thing on purpose.
Oh yeah, I know. It was great.
She completely did. She's like, all right, you know, my work here is done. Let's go.
All right.
So yeah, great thumbs little up. Episode.
Fun episode.
Yeah, it's good. Now I want to talk about, it's in the middle of the podcast, but whatever. I'm talking about Hulu had a preview of a show called Deception. And I asked the guys to, you know, it was on Hulu for free, so give it a shot. Watch it, see what you think. I know that Susie watched it. Did you watch it, Tom?
I didn't get a chance to, no.
You know, all I have to say is I was deceived by Deception.
Oh!
You've been waiting for that one, right?
I have. That was painful. It was painful for so many reasons, but primarily because... on paper, it sounded like it might be a good idea, but the execution, like, what the hell happened? It looked like, I mean, I didn't even watch shows like Revenge, and there's all these other shows that I think, you know, Ringer and others that I think are probably similar in vein to this, where you kind of get this whole, you know, the rich family, and could all the characters have been more like two-dimensional characters of what they're supposed to be? Like the rich mom, you know, who's just like... you know, the queen of the castle who takes care of everything and totally in charge.
The reason why she was so cold is none of those kids are hers.
I know, but they played her. She was, the stepmom or whatever. It's like
she was the evil stepmother. Yes.
Yeah. She was completely in character. And of course the father, you first see him. Now, of course I love, what's his name?
Victor Garber,
you know, you first see him in the conference room and you think, oh, he's the powerful head of the family. And then when he finds out about his daughter being dead, the whole storyline apparently is about this, the daughter being found dead. you see him and he's like in the little side conference room, you know, slunched against the window, sobbing practically to his wife. And she's like, don't worry, I'll take care of it all. So you're like, okay, so this is the daddy with the big heart. So of course it was, you know, daddy's little girl, you know, and the whole thing. And so every character that came in was like that. And honestly, I didn't really care about any of them, not even our lead.
Well, what's interesting is, of course, I love Victor Garber, and they did not give him anything to work with. And the other, my main quibble actually is a weird quibble, but you have Victor Garber and his second wife who's young or whatever, and that's fine because that's his second wife. I don't have no problem with that age thing because rich people do that. But the problem I actually have is you see the daughter that died, you see her brother, and then you see the younger daughter, and then they're like, and our older brother Jeff or whatever, and I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, that actor, I've seen him a lot. He's a good actor.
It's Tate Donovan, right?
Yes, I think it is. He's a good actor. But my problem is, I was like, was Victor Garber 10 when he had him? Like, what the heck?
I know.
It's like the age difference is insane. Like, if they had said that dude was Victor Garber's brother, I would have been like, oh, fine. But they're like, yes, that's his son. And I was like, no. That's not his son.
His son is almost as gray as he is.
I know. It's just like, I was like, that they're not real. I was like, I don't believe it. That was my first big quibble when they show him. I was like, are you kidding me? And then the lead, the actress, I've seen her before, and I can't think of what I've seen her in. And I think she's mainly been supporting, and I think this is maybe her first lead or something, because, wow. They're trying to do a weird revenge / running off of Scandal's doing great, having a black woman lead. And I normally would say, oh, that's great. But it's not good. It's not a good show. It's like they had this idea, and like you said, on paper, it sounds like a good idea, but then them trying to put it together just does not work. And her big love triangle between her old boyfriend, who's a cop,
What happened? What was with that? Like, they force-feed it at the end where she's there for dinner, and then, of course, after they have their steaks, which she thinks are fabulous, and they spend 10 minutes talking about, you know, then next thing you know, of course, they're smooching away. I'm like, really? In the first episode, this is how you want to play how you're setting up the characters?
Well, I mean, I think they were doing that because they wanted to establish that she has more of a relationship with him, so that then when it goes to her boyfriend she had when she was in high school, which was the older brother of that rich family, they could be like, oh, she can't sleep with him. And I'm just like, no, that's not working.
And might I add too, this is a classic example of when I hate them using flashbacks.
Oh, right. Yeah. The flashback versions of themselves just didn't look like, I didn't believe them.
Oh, it's horrible. And it was like, instead of like an arrow, like we just talked about, where it's used very cleverly to kind of keep the story moving, this was like, oh, how do we explain all this? Because suddenly here's this rich family, and how do we explain
all
this
the relationships
coming into the family? Yeah, how do we wedge her in there? I know, let's show it by flashbacks.
Do they use the same actors with makeup?
No, they use different actors, like, because they're supposed to all be like really young high school kids.
Yeah.
So they used young kids. They use young kids to be them, to show how they all knew each other and all the relationships and stuff. But I didn't believe that the flashback characters were the same characters. It just didn't flow right. Especially when you first meet a character, you don't really, you're just learning who they are. So,
exactly.
So by having these flashback versions of themselves, it was weird because I'm trying to learn who they are in present, and you're distracting me with younger versions that are different.
Yeah, and it was flashbacks 101. Like, they could have just sent the second unit out to do it because they're in the present day and they're telling the story, and, you know, so here it just, they kind of clunkily put them in because it's better than any other kind of exposition, because the lead, she doesn't have anyone to do exposition with, you know,
right.
She
there's
can't
no,
tell us. There's no voiceover like there is an arrow, you know, and there's nothing.
Well, because her whole thing is she's undercover, so she literally can't talk to anybody.
Exactly. But so the only way for us to find out is through these flashbacks that they shove at us.
Yeah. And then the whole incest, I'm pretty sure it's incest.
You know, it has to be, because what other big ooh-ha, why would she be pregnant?
Well, because the whole thing is, but now you don't know who the incestor person is. It's either her father, her older brother, or her other brother. So there's three candidates who are the father of this baby that she ended up, who is now pretending to be her little sister. So they're all, but I mean, I think the red herring is the younger brother is really, really close to that sister. So I was like, oh, they're trying to play it off like he's got a super close relationship with her, so it's probably him. But I was like, as long as it's not Victor Garber, I'm like, because that would just be...
that would be disappointing.
That would just hurt my head.
And then the other guy, the friend, the younger daughter's friend, her like school study mate or whatever, and you know, the whole taking the pictures and then running off, and then conveniently rips her shirt open so he can see that she's wired.
Oh, but that wasn't her friend. That was
wasn't
a reporter.
No, it was.
It was a reporter. And
they look the same. They all look the same.
No, but it was literally...
Some guy in a tree taking pictures.
Yeah, but he was a reporter. That was why he was in the house yelling at the girl, because he was trying to get into the sister's room to get the information.
I thought she explained that he was a friend from school.
No. She lied. Yeah, she lied.
It was the same guy, though.
Yes, it was the same guy. Anyway, it doesn't even matter.
It doesn't even matter. Talk about spending all the time on a negative show.
Oh, my God. You're right. All right, we're done.
Yeah. But you're saving people from making the same mistake you did.
There you go, Tom.
That's true.
You're providing a public service.
Thank you.
Yes. Don't watch Deception. It will really.
My time is your time now.
Yes, I really wanted to stop watching it, and I forced myself to finish it. So.
Me too. Yep.
All right. Let's talk about something good. Next up, let's talk about a person of interest.
Oh, always good.
Yes. And this was a good one because this was their fall finale or whatever, and they left this on a really good cliffhanger.
Yeah, they did.
It was all really good. Like everything, though the commercial did give it away a little bit, the trailer.
I don't know, for the next episode.
Yeah,
seriously.
I watch those most of the time, so.
I try and turn them off, so I don't know either. I want a surprise every week.
Yeah, well, this one was still, it was a good surprise because you didn't see it going quite the way it went, you know?
Exactly. No, you're right. They did a good job of not totally going too far and revealing everything. But I think still my favorite part of my favorite element out of this particular one was the fact that you could see Reese just getting, like, he just was committed to this particular, these people of interest almost, if you will, you know, and he just kept going and going. He was down that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
You know, your Finch was trying to reel him back and be like, you know, come on, you're getting a little invested here. And Reese was basically like, yeah, but these kids are trying to do the right thing and I'm kind of with them. You know, this is, and it showed, you know, kind of flashed back to the core of Reese anyway. And the whole point and the whole reason Finch got him, you know, even from the pilot was, you know, he told Reese, you know, all you've ever wanted to do was to do good and to help people, you know? And so every week when we see them do that, that is what effectively they're doing. But, you know, this time it just felt like it was more personal for Reese and he really felt like he was going to help them and he needed to continue to do that no matter what.
Yeah. Like at the part where he's like, okay, let's go rob this bank. I was like,
yeah,
what?
Yeah. I'm like, of course he would. That's Reese. He's in it, man. He's going to dig himself that hole. Oh, and the look on Finch's face at the end when he realized that they got out, but Reese didn't.
Yeah, he looked like he was going to cry. He looked like he was going to cry.
I know.
Oh, all sad.
Poor Finch.
I thought it was really interesting. I mean, the main storyline was good, and it was good to see the lieutenant from Stargate Universe again.
Oh, that guy. Actually, I didn't like him on Stargate Universe, but continue.
But I think what's interesting is all these machinations behind the scenes with HR. I think this is the second time we've seen Clark Johnson.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. As the head of HR, and just the fact that there's a tie-in with Carter's prospective boyfriend.
I really like that, actually, because I didn't... There was something about him the first time that he was introduced.
It felt too convenient.
Exactly, it did. It was too easy. It was too convenient. And there was just something that seemed off about it. And yes, this time, you know, he's connected to HR.
But I don't necessarily think he's dirty. I felt like that guy just asked him for a favor and he gave it to him. I don't know if he's actually HR, though.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering that, too. I think he might... Beyond that, he's like kind of borderline, or he just bad, you know, wrong place, wrong time kind of thing.
It could go either way, but I think that it was just better to have something a little more complex going on than, oh, Carter's new boyfriend.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
But she was so cute. She likes him.
It's person of interest. They do complex fairly well.
That's true. There's no lack of that anywhere.
Yeah.
And it's also interesting that even though the CIA is, the real CIA is off base about who Reese is working for or with.
Oh, yeah, he's working for China.
The Chinese.
Yeah. That was awesome.
They got the methodology down, so they're going to have to start mixing it up a little bit.
That's true.
It's not going to be so easy to communicate anymore.
No. Some,
you know, who watches The Watchmen?
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, and I like the fact, too, I have to say, my buddy Fusco here on the backside, you know, I like the fact that they're where they're going with him, where they've kind of diverted him a little bit. So, you know, he's caught in HR. He's doing what Reese pretty much forced his hand to do, but he agreed to do, which is to remain in HR, you know, kind of be the mole for them. And so it's now that it's been outed, you know, basically within the police force, and Carter's investigating Fusco now, it's just kind of sad to see that, you know, here Fusco's, you know, kind of on the on his own track, because I don't know, I'm trying to figure out, is he doing it because he doesn't want to rely on Reese or Finch, or is it just that, you know, he feels this compulsion to get out of it on his own? I'm not sure, where he is.
I feel like it's a thing that the writers are doing, which bothers me, because half of his problem could be resolved with a phone call, you know? And so whenever it feels like a false stakes, not just stakes, but false problems, I guess, because all he'd have to do is call Finch or Reese and tell them what's going on, and then the situation's resolved. So that does bother me a little bit. And he's being blackmailed for a murder that actually Reese did.
Yeah.
So I'm just kind of like, oh, come on.
But don't forget, Reese did it with his gun. That was the whole point, you know?
No. That's not, it's not,
not Styles?
It's not Styles. It's,
oh,
that,
it's the other one.
It's
that's
the
right.
other
it
cop
the one,
that,
because
Reese killed that guy to save Fosco's life. So,
right.
But he's being blackmailed for that murder. And I'm kind of like, really? Come on. So
I don't know, but there have been times in the past. I mean, as much as I love Reese, and it's true, because Nolan and what's his name did an interview, I guess, just like a couple days ago, and so some of the people on the phone call posted up online. But they basically, you know, make a point of saying, don't forget, you know, a lot of the fans forget, if you go back to the beginning, you know, Fusco was basically taking Reese out to kill him and bury his body by the water. Mm-hmm. So we met him as a bad guy who was willing to kill people, and probably and maybe had, and we just don't know that. So he truly is.
Yeah,
you
it's
know,
unlikely
does have
that he was his first.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You know. So there is a matter of atonement in there, and so I think at some point Reese knows that, because Reese has worked with all levels of bad guys, and so I think, you know, like you said, Libya, sure, it could be a phone call, and I think Fusco tried that. And realize that, you know, there have been times in the past where Reese has basically said, hey, Fusco, you know, you're in a pinch, great, you'll work it out, and hangs it up. He obviously, we all see it happen where Reese immediately, he'll go to Carter's aid in a heartbeat, but a lot of times he's like, Fusco, figure it out, you know, take a bullet to the ass, you know, do whatever you need to do. And it's like, he just, because he understands the value of Fusco, but he doesn't have that level of respect for him that he does for Carter.
I just really like him, that's all. All right, let's wrap that up.
I like him too, but I understand the kind of dynamics that they're trying to.
I get it too. So let's wrap it up. We are all reiterating our own points. So it's like sounding like a choir. We should all sing together.
It's an amen corner, sister.
Oh,
all
got
right.
It.
So thumbs up for person of interest. One thing we forgot to mention is the cliffhanger, which is Reese gets caught with three other guys in suits. So the question is, which one of them is the man in the suit?
All right. Yeah, boom, boom.
All right, so wrap that up. Thumbs up. Next up, let's talk about Vampire Diaries.
Woo-wee!
And I have to say, man, that was it made me ill. The end of that episode, I physically felt like I was like, I don't feel very good right now. Like,
which part?
The part where he kills Tyler's mom in a fountain to Christmas music? Like, come on, man. That just seems wrong.
Completely out of spite.
I know.
Completely out of spite. It's like, you tried to cross me, you're going to pay, and I'm not even going to bite her. I'm going to do it the most mundane way.
It was just wrong. And then they had the Christmas music underneath it. Like, I was like, come on.
Well, just the fact they slaughtered the 12 hybrids.
Yeah, that didn't bother me as much. Because, they were faceless, and we didn't really know them at all.
Or
care about them at all. So I was like, eh, whatever. But Tyler's mom's been there since the beginning.
Yep.
And so I really was like, oh, man, really? Come on.
I read an interview with her. They did have the decency to call her up before the scripts went out saying, hey, it's been a great 3+ years, but...
we are killing you next week.
Yeah. But if you're an adult on these kinds of shows, though, you can't really feel safe. Sorry. You know.
Yeah, that's true. I kind of wish Tyler was the one that got drowned in the pool, but... You know. Can't have everything you wish for.
True.
But the storyline, the other thing that bothered me, Well, that didn't bother me. I mean, that was a good story. That was good. Even though I wasn't a fan of it, I understood why they did it, and it emotionally moved me, which is what you're supposed to do. What bothered me, though, was Caroline and Stefan plotting and discussing stuff that they don't know what's going on, and now Stefan's mad at Damon and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, come on. Are we in high school? Like,
well,
like,
some of them are.
Oh, that's true. Because they were like, he was like, are you sure they're together? He's like, what did you see? Did you see anything? I was like, she didn't see anything. She was on the phone.
OMG.
She was on the phone, knows nothing about what happened, did not see anybody, and is making all these conclusions and reporting them to Stefan and creating drama.
Basically. Drama.
Oh, that bothered me a lot. But someone else speak about Vampire Diaries, please. No?
I enjoyed the episode. Susie and Allison, you don't watch?
No, I watch. I just, again, I'm like, okay, it was all right. I thought it was actually funny when they had all the Christmas music playing in the background while there's slaughter going on everywhere.
Did you enjoy Jeremy chopping woods?
I have to tell you, I wanted to turn that off and cleanse my eyes with a little of my arrow action, you know, because it's just to this day, I still, just the whole idea of Jeremy, just, I so don't like him, so it's like, no, that didn't help at all. That actually made it worse.
I have to say, the chopping wood was nice. I will say
I'm glad it worked for somebody, so that's good.
Jeremy and Bonnie back together. I've only been seeing it for like 2 years.
Oh, yes, fine. Yes, get them back together. That would be great.
Bonnie.
Yeah.
But
that whole thing about like trying to work the you know, I don't know, what do you want to call it? Like the hoodoo magic or whatever, you know, the talking through trance thing with Jeremy to make sure that he doesn't try and kill Elena at the next opportunity. Yeah, that went so well.
That was so great. He was like, what do you feel right now? And he basically was like, I hate her. I hate her guts. I want
to rip
your
heart out. I want to stab you to death. And then afterwards he's like, hey, so how'd it go?
But yeah, other than that.
Yeah, that was pretty good. So they were like, okay, let's link your feelings for Bonnie to your sister. So now I was like, but that could have backfiring effects. Like, you don't really want, because the feelings that he has for Bonnie, they're now connecting them to his feelings for his sister. I think that's a bad idea.
That's kind of a little creepy sounding.
Yeah, but I mean, but that's what they did, basically. They're like, every time you think about killing your sister, think about Bonnie and how you feel about her. And I was like, that's one step away from weird.
Yeah,
but,
well, not only that, but those wires could get crossed pretty easily with that kitten, you know?
That's what I said. I'm like, I have enough incest on all my other shows. I do not need any.
Here's my question. Do we know what creepy teacher guy is up to?
Oh, Mr. Shane.
Oh,
well,
yeah, he's trying to revive Silas. Cyrus? Silas. Is it Silas?
Ooh, Silas.
Or he's trying to raise, Cyrus. Or he is Silas and is trying to raise, no. He wants to die, right? Because I think he's immortal. I think he is Silas and he's immortal and he wants the cure so that he can die, is my guess at this point. But
so what does that have to do with with his alliance with the Reverend and the people that...
Well, remember, he needs sacrifices to power the spell. And so he got the preacher guy to kill all the people in the church, because I think that was 12 people. Because apparently 12 is a big number. So he got them to blow themselves up. So he got the power from that sacrifice. And then he tricked, what is that man's name? The guy that chopped everybody up. I just blanked on his name.
The hunter dude?
No. The original. Klaus, thank you.
Klaus.
He just tricked Klaus into killing all his hybrids. So Klaus just killed the 12 that he needed killed, though now he's also going after Tyler, which will make 13, but he doesn't care about that. He cares about the number 12 for some reason, because the witch said that gives power if you're going to do a spell that involves some hocus-pocus thing that he talked about that he's an expert in. So he needed those 12 hybrids killed to power his spell.
Yeah.
But we don't know what the spell is exactly.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's just... I don't know. I kind of don't like that aspect of the plot line. It's like, tell us what you're doing.
Yeah.
Well,
the whole,
you gotta
like,
have a
shrouded
twist.
Mystery isn't helping.
At least tell the audience what you're doing.
Yeah.
You gotta have the twist. There, I have to... Vampire Diaries is really good with twisting the story in a way that everything is moving, everything flows, and giving you surprises. So I'm kind of okay with them holding this back to give us a surprise for later. Nah, just me. I guess the rest of you do not feel the same way. All right. So we're going to say thumbs up on Vampire Diaries, right?
Yep.
Okay. This is good. It was a good finale. I can't wait for more, except that I am tired already of Stefan and Damon fighting over Elena. Can we end that already? Please. Thank you. All right.
Yes, done. Please. I second that.
That's core of what the show's been about since day one.
It's been about their triangle, but it hasn't really been about the brothers really fighting over her. Because when she was with Stefan, Damon was cool with it. I mean, he accepted it. He was okay with it. And so it makes Stefan having a hissy fit about it just seem really childish. That's all.
What he has to do, call Catherine, double date.
Have a double date?
Problem solved. You don't love her? Deal with it.
All right. Let's move on to Fringe. And we have two episodes to talk about this week. Go ahead.
I just want to put out there what is in the water in the writer's room at Fringe. Because the episode where Walter dropped acid, wow.
Yes, apparently it was acid was in their water.
It was crazy.
I did not like it.
But you didn't either.
Really? Yeah, I'm same thing. I was not happy with it.
I like their experimental episodes generally when they do crazy ideas. The cartoon episode with, you know, them being in a different in Olivia's mind. I thought that was fine. I did not like this episode. It just
interesting.
It was one. We're coming up to the finale, so I'm like, all right, let's move this thing. And two, Walter's mind is a weird place anyway, but him dropping acid makes it even weirder. And I just couldn't follow it, and I didn't feel anything because he was so out there. I didn't feel what I normally feel for him.
And I'm actually, because I feel totally the same way. And the other thing too is, as we're watching it and we get near the end of that episode and they're on the, you know, the guy's on the porch with the gun and they got, you know, Michael and the whole thing, and he's asking him for the password or whatever the secret code is or whatever. And everyone's sitting there and I'm just like, Black Umbrella. Umbrella.
Because they kind of covered that in the previous scene.
Exactly. The whole thing in the car. Right. And so I'm like, it's Black Umbrella. But they still had to go through that whole thing, you know, another like 10 minutes of tripping in his head to finally get to him where he's so proud of himself because he remembered it's Black Umbrella. So that bothered me. I'm like, come on, you know, you have a smart audience. You know, you don't have to milk it for that.
I don't think it was a matter of being smart or not. I mean, I agree with you that the scene technically was unnecessary as far as bringing up Black Umbrella was concerned. Yeah. However, I enjoyed it just because I thought it was so funny and triply weird to do this Monty Python animation sequence. I mean, nobody ever does that. Even when they do animation stuff, it's never that specific. And to just go straight to Terry Gilliam, I thought was brilliant. And they did it perfectly. I thought it was a beautiful job. So I was perfectly happy to sit through that just simply because I thought it was brilliantly done. And just exactly the kind of thing I think that Walter would trip out about in his mind. So even though, yes, it was unnecessary, I enjoyed it anyway.
Yeah, I did too, but you know what I wish they would have done? I wish they had taken that particular montage, the homage to Monty Python, and used it earlier in the show for one of their other multiple flashbacks. Because at least they would have had it at a value, you know, it would have been value added at that time.
Yes. I think either that or remove the previous reference to Black Umbrella so that it came
exactly.
Reflection. Yeah,
I agree.
All right, Tom has a thought.
No, I'm with Allison on this one. I thought what was kind of interesting, though, was Walter's having visions of the former lab assistant about morality and ethics. And this the fact that he's really concerned about those extra pieces of his brain being back in turning him into the way, you know, turning him evil or just completely mad, you know, mad scientist. I thought it was interesting. It wasn't one of the strongest episodes of the season, but it kind of set up for, you know, once they introduced young Michael, we're in Act 3 of the final season.
Right. I get that, but yeah. Oh. No, I'm sorry. I'm jumping ahead of the next episode. But I get what you're saying, but it just didn't work for me. But I respect that you guys thoroughly enjoyed it. And then the next episode, which came on last night for us, I really did like.
That was a terrific episode.
Yeah, it had all the strong points and everything that I really like about Fringe. All came to the fore. It's only problem I had, well, it's not a problem really, it's just that I knew they were going to kill her.
Like, Nina?
Yeah,
R.I.P. Nina.
Yeah, I knew it, like, as soon as she got discovered and they figured out who she was, I was like, she's dead. They're going to kill her. And
But I'm glad they
on
had...
On her terms.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And I'm glad...
I thought that was great.
Tom, go ahead.
I'm glad they had the cojones to do it. Now, granted, it's the final season, so, you know, there's no rule book anymore. But still, even though Nina has been duplicitous and shady over 5 years in a couple of different realities, we still ultimately like the character and we like the actor. And the fact that she was a mole working on their behalf, you know, it made her loss touching. I really do want to know, you know, when the kid touches you, does he just get a window into your mind and you get to relive all of your significant moments, or was it something more?
I think it's more directed than that. The moments that we saw that he brought up in Walter were very specific, you know, and very, very key. It wasn't just random moments from his life. It was things that played into, you know, discovering exactly who this kid was and who Donald is and all of that. So, which I loved. And I think that, yes, this is his way of communicating essentially at this point.
It is. And you're right. 'Cause when he touched, Nina first, she had this look on her face of like, wow, you know, like it opened her mind. So I think he was able to tell her things that she needed to know. You know, the communication there, it wasn't just, oh wow, he made me relive my past, yay. You know, there was some sort of, she had knowledge. I think she gained knowledge, and I think that really helped her. She was a very strong woman anyway, which was a great character, but I think it really made it value added, or I believed her. It was believable when she took the gun. It was even before she took the gun, I think. I can't remember actually when that was. Where she was telling Widmark when he was like about to do his mojo on her, and he stopped and he's like, well, how come you're not worried about it or afraid? And she gave her little speech about like, you know, guess what? It's like, you're the animals and I'm not. And I think
that
it was because, wasn't it awesome?
Yes, it was
brilliant.
I'm like, you go girl.
Right, exactly.
If you're going to go out with class, and it was fast.
She did. Yeah. And she did that after she'd obviously had that information, I think, from Michael, where I thought to myself, I'm like, damn, she knows something, and she knows that what she's doing is the right thing, and she knows that the humans are going to win. Like, she knows this is her part in it. Right. And it was kind of awesome. So,
I was going to say, Windmark, for, you know, observers who are super emotionless and feel nothing, Windmark's feeling a lot.
I noticed that too. I mean, as soon as his reaction even to the other observer, you know, in the tube was purely emotional. I mean, turning to her and saying, you know, you're animals. Mm-hmm. I mean, that comes from an emotional place.
Right. And his thing is, he always like, humans, their weakness is emotion. And I'm like, dude, you're feeling a whole lot of emotions right now. Mm-hmm. And he was angry at her for calling him an animal, and he had to control. You could tell he was barely controlling himself, you know. And he actually, in the preview, they show that he's like talking about. He's like, I have to get them. It's like, there's no explanation why I feel this way. It's like I'm compelled. You know, and I was like,
because it's revenge. He doesn't have the word for it. Right. But yeah, it's clearly not something that he's doing just because it's the logical course of action.
No.
He's doing it from a place of wanting revenge on these people.
Right. And he can't, and he doesn't even understand it, which is really interesting. I think that I'm really excited where the show is going right now. Like now, because after last week, I was a little worried. But this week, we're back on track. And some people thought that the kid was going to be September, but finding that September was Donald actually works just as well. Because like, who the heck is this Donald that Walter's all of a sudden
hanging out with? I think you're talking
about, yeah. Like,
who is
this guy?
I don't think that's entirely eliminated, actually, because you could, you know, loop around through time, which they do, and he could still turn out to be September. You know, he could just have gone back in time, gotten lost, you know, and then circuitously become September later on. So it is possible. I think I don't know if they're necessarily going to go there, but I think that it's a possibility still.
Okay.
Something that I think we can be assured of is that the reset plan that we discussed a couple weeks ago is probably what they're going for. That's the way to defeat the observers.
Yeah, we're going to reset time. I was like, man, we've done different dimensions. We've done alternate realities. We haven't really reset time. Well, we did it on one episode. One episode they reset time, but they haven't actually reset time exactly. They've just gone to alternate realities. So alternate realities, alternate timelines, which is sort of, but they're actually going to go back.
My head hurts.
I know. Trying to keep track of what's real and what's not, because there was that thing, he's like, oh, I know the kid, but from an alternate timeline. But he knows you. Yes, because observers are like that. What? Okay.
You're outside time and space, man. Deal with it.
All right. So thumbs up for Fringe. We're all happy right now?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
All right. So all I want to talk to everybody about is that, or remind everybody about, is that next week is our end of the year podcast where we will be discussing best, worst, like, dislike, whatever, of 2012. So bring your lists. I will be reading the couple of emails I got from fans online. And anybody else who wants to submit their lists, please do so. And we shall read them. And that is all. Send the feedback to tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter. We are on Facebook. You can listen to us on getthepointradio.com, Krypton Radio, iTunes, and Weedonapolis. And we'll talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.